Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! For those of you who are not familiar with the program, a couple of quick warnings. We are foul-mouthed disciples of Jesus.
Joyfully so.
Yes, joyfully so in this third week of Advent. So if you're not down with toilet humor and fart jokes, then perhaps this is not the spiritual direction for you. But you're welcome to stick it out for as long as you can tolerate us.
Please.
And on top of that, we are Catholic, but you don't have to be. We try to cast a wide net here on Church Drunk so that all are welcome. And we are happy that you've joined us. And as always, our little chat starts off with a question. I am Guest here with my co-host Diz. And
hello.
Diz, what are you drinking?
I am sipping a winter welcome ale.
Yes.
Which is from a Yorkshire
Samuel
brewery.
Samuel Smith's. Yes.
And apparently it's the oldest Yorkshire brewery.
I don't know.
Something
like
that. It had a purple label.
Yep.
And it said winter welcome. And I thought that was very Adventy.
A Yorkshire tradition for 30 years.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome, baby Jesus. We have some ale for you.
Yeah, the winter welcome ale.
That's not a bad gift.
No,
to bring
not
to
at
the
all.
Lord.
Yeah, that's the fourth wise man. Just brought booze.
The little drummer boy. Yeah. And a little flask.
Well, see, all three gifts, they're prophetic in their own right, right? Yeah. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh, priest, prophet, king, etc., etc. Mm. Well, the one that brought booze was just foretelling of the wedding at Cana.
Oh, it was for Mary.
Yeah.
That was for,
for Mary. Yeah. Here you go, Mary. It's going to be a long 33 years.
Good luck to you. Mary was driving. Just sipping in the background.
Oh, my.
Oh, there's that heresy. Did we warn you about that? We tripped right up to it.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you drinking?
Well, I am drinking rosé out of a pint glass because it's joy week. So
you do what you want.
Drink something pink out of a receptacle.
The liturgical color is rose, and you're drinking rosé. So
that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Yes. Don't let all the lace and obviously pink things fool you.
I'm drinking joy.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I think I'm drinking joy.
Yeah. So you've got beer. I've got wine. What should we be drinking, though, realistically, according to Michael P. Foley?
So Michael P. Foley has his big book that we often refer to,
Drinking with the Saints,
which is really a good go-to book. Like, mostly good.
Yes.
This one, Drinking with Saint Nick, is a bit more hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like to stick to just the days. So there is a feast day for a Saint Gorgonia.
Yes.
Poor darling was given a pretty shitty name.
We're off to a great start.
The Gorgon.
This may or may not be a terrible cocktail, and it's named after Saint Gorgonia.
No, I think it would be a good cocktail.
Okay.
And I would definitely try it other pink rose week day coming up soon.
Explain to me.
Okay. So firstly, I just want to note that Saint Gorgonia is in a family of all saints.
That's right.
And we think of that as a modern thing with Therese of Lisieux's parents are both sainted.
Right.
But, this is in 375.
Yeah.
So these folks were the original Holy Family. Well,
not the original.
Actually, saintly family.
They were kind of a very saintly family, yes.
Never mind. Anyway, there's two parents who were sainted. Three of their kids are sainted, including Saint Gorgonia,
Saint
who
Gorgonia.
Overcame her horrid name because she both had a spirit of modesty.
Mm.
And a spirit of temperance, which she represented as pink because of white and red. I don't know why. Those both represented
modesty for white?
You would think that,
and
but
temperance for red.
Michael P. Foley's book says one red tint was for the blush of modesty.
Oh.
And the white one, the sign of temperance. So temperance could kind of be more like
purity.
And your actual blush on your cheeks is
modesty.
Anyway, she's
modesty.
We're stretching here, but
this is really putting a whole new spin on that song Roxanne. You don't have to put on the modesty light, Roxanne.
I mean, that's also biblical, way back when.
You
good
don't
old
have
Rahab.
To sell your body to the night.
The worst part about us, you know what? So much sex references,
Roxanne,
and yet so biblical because
Roxanne.
Rahab. Oh my gosh. Not something to listen to week. This is something to read week. I'm reading.
All right. Tell us about what this
cocktail
is composed of. Anyway,
the pink lady, for whatever virtues you want to assign to any freaking color, is 1.5 ounces of gin.
Yes.
1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice. 1/2 ounce of grenadine. We'll come back to that. And 1 egg white. And you just shake it all together 40 times, put it into a cocktail glass. I think the hipster, twist on this would be make that egg white into a foam
right,
that you're going to float on top And instead of grenadine, there's all these nice little like new tinctures and syrups. And we just discovered at our local Trader Joe's, and if you are so lucky as to have one, they have little tiny strawberries in a jar, Italian strawberries, and that has a good little syrup. I would do that.
Maybe take that syrup, turn it into like a strawberry rhubarb shrub, you know what I'm saying? And then
if you're super fancy. Yeah. That's what you would do, patron saint of cocktails. I would be like, just throw a little of that, just stir it around. That looks pink. There we go.
Well, Saint Gorgonia, we will have to try your cocktail at some point. Yeah. Or if you, dear listener, try Saint Gorgonia's cocktail, the Pink Lady, which I really do. I think the hipster version of it, we have to call it the Roxanne. Yes, let us know.
I want
what
like
you
a
think.
Gorgon with like pink snakes.
Yeah, the Gorgon with the multiple arms, except it's all pink. Yeah, like freaky Gumby.
Gross.
So
anyway, if you make it, send us a pic. We'd like to know.
Yeah, if you've been listening throughout Advent with our little podcast here, you know that we are working our way through the 4 weeks of Advent. With first week, something to hear.
Yes.
So we went through some music that we
Advent
wanted
playlist.
To listen
so
to
good.
During Advent, and then we had something to watch last week. And then we have something to read this week. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about some of our favorite things to read during Advent that have themes of joy and happiness and Christmasness and zombies sometimes.
Yeah.
And next week will be something to nosh. So
this is the best week of Advent because it is the joy week.
Yes.
So it's very open-ended. You can really argue anything is Advent in the joy week.
It's true.
You're supposed to be joyful.
If it makes you happy, then
you're over the hump. We are so close to Christmas.
I don't know about everything because, like, there's a lot of sins happy. Like, a lot of sinfulness. The root of it is like, man, it makes me happy.
Well, joy is different than happiness.
True, exactly.
So if it makes you joyful, I think you can argue. Joy is everlasting. Joy is a sure sign of the Holy Spirit. If zombies make me joyful, then they are somehow a holy zombie.
Right. Yeah. Don't judge me. Don't judge my zombies and my joyfulness.
Why are we talking about zombies? Because
there is one of our favorite Christmas time books.
One of our favorite all the time authors.
Yes. Christopher Moore's The Stupidest Angel.
So dumb.
It's so great.
And if you've read Lamb, the stupidest angel is Raziel.
Yes.
Who we totally love.
Yeah. So if you are a regular listener, you know that we are big fans of Christopher Moore. We recommend all of his books, but the one that really kind of got us going. I mean, we do recommend all of them, some more than others.
Yeah.
Would you ever tell people not to read?
No, I would just say in a certain order so you don't get turned off.
Yes. Yeah.
That's all my caution.
Yeah.
It's a gradient.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about his book, Lamb, which is the gospel according to Biff, Jesus' childhood friend.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read it, stop listening to us and go read it now.
Please. We'll buy you a copy.
But assuming you have already read it or that you at least kind of have heard of us rave about it and are like, they're idiots, I'm not going to read that book. Another book by the same author featuring
much shorter.
The same angel. Who is kind of dunderheaded in his own way.
He loves soap operas. Lamb,
and now he is
he's very passionate.
Featuring a new level of dunderheadedness in The Stupidest Angel.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a crossover book for Christopher Moore. He does this from time to time. He takes characters from like one of his like settings.
It's Les Lizard that has a lot of repeats
in
this book.
There's a lot of Pine Cove going on. And there's a couple actually I think that happen in Pine Cove. But there's Pine Cove is one of the sort of communities that Christopher Moore writes about in some of his books. And then he took a character from Lamb and dropped him into Pine Cove.
Yeah.
And that character happens to be the stupidest of all the angels.
Raziel.
And so
not canon.
Not to give away too much, but the basic premise is Raziel makes a huge whoopsie. And ends up inadvertently bringing the dead back to a state of reanimation.
He's just fulfilling a child's wish.
And there's zombies walking around Pine Cove
and unusual heroes, which is very Christmassy.
Yes.
Right? And an unusual hero comes out of the crowd.
As this small community gathers in the church for like, I don't know, it was like a Christmas pageant or something.
It's a Christmas pageant.
Yeah.
And I think the church
was it a pageant or was it like a
not a pageant, a party.
Yeah.
I think it's a town of only 5,000 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's like one policeman who's one of the main characters.
Right.
And there's a couple other like kind of wild card characters.
Yes.
And one of them is like starts the book off like looking for the Christmas tree and she's just gonna like chop it down in the middle of like her front yard.
She cray.
She's off her meds, but she's a good person.
Yeah. And I don't know that that was the best description. I don't know that we've really done her justice. But at the same time, we don't want to give away too much. So
no, we don't want to give away. Yeah. Let's bring it back. Why would you recommend this book for Christmas or for Advent?
Well, one of the things that I have always loved about Christopher Moore is his ability to take a situation and turn it completely on its head. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is a story about Christmas, Christmas time, that that gets to become about zombies. And and then he, like, brings it back and still makes it somehow, like, heartwarming and with a message at the center of it. That's the thing that I loved about Lamb that drew me in the first time I read it. Mm-hmm. And it still is, you know, I mean, he really kind of lays it out there. The fact that, like, this is a Christmas book. It's the stupidest angel. It's like
ratchet your expectations accordingly.
Yeah, like, he's not trying to win, like, a Man Booker Prize here. He is writing about, you know, like, something funny that happens, but it always has a heart when Christopher Moore writes about it. And so I think that that's one of the things that I love. Like, when you sit down to read a book during Christmas time, like, there's gotta be a heart there. There has to be a heart to that story. And this one does not disappoint in that regard.
Okay.
What about you? What do you love about, Stupidest Angel?
I was going to say why I like Christopher Moore is, like, he is a whimsical wordsmith. Mm. And, like, you get that straight out the gate with this book too. Like, there's just great images. They're kind of funny. Like, he doesn't take it all very seriously.
Yeah.
And yet, like, it's very well crafted. Like, if you like reading words, you will enjoy just the imagery of this. It just gives me that joyful, pleasant feeling. Like, I enjoy it because it's not a, you know, we're not looking for the deeper themes in this book, right? Like, we are along for a ride. We've got good characters. Yes. We've got well-crafted, fun, crazy imagery. And it's just fun. It's a great joy read.
And if you read either this or Lamb and don't walk away from it, like, loving Raziel in the way that I would imagine, I am the youngest of all the siblings in my family, and yet I would imagine that you love Raziel in the way that you, like, love a younger sibling. Like, wow, I know that you're just going to screw everything up, and yet I have to love you anyway.
I mean, none of my siblings are screw-ups. Thanks, guys, for listening.
Wow. Wow, I know your siblings.
Raziel.
And you lying.
You're a bunch of fuckers, all of you.
But they're the kind that you love, not the kind where you need to, like, draw a line.
They might be more like Raziel than I actually think, bringing destruction upon us.
Yeah. As you think about it.
Freaking love Raziel. He's my favorite.
Like, you have to love Raziel in order to really dig in. And if you don't wind up loving Raziel, then we have probably steered you in the wrong direction. You might not be a Chris Moore fan.
Yeah. And that's okay. You don't have to be. We'll just think you're weird.
Yeah. So what else do we enjoy reading during Advent?
Well, I know we talked about kind of highlighting the classics, and I'm sure we have here before, but you especially wanted to make sure we called out The Christmas Carol because we made a horrible, dreadful oversight last week talking about what we like to watch, and Guest really needs to tell us what is your favorite thing to watch and read during Advent, Guest.
Last week was something to watch, and we talked about a lot of things to watch, and I don't even remember if we mentioned it and just kind of glossed over it, or if it wasn't mentioned at all.
I don't know if you did.
But The Muppet Christmas Carol is not just my favorite Christmas movie, it's my favorite movie. Like,
he's a real Muppet guy.
If I weren't, like, you know, a person of discipline, as I am, like, a lot of self-restraint in my life, as you know, it's a strength of mine.
I mean, everything's relative.
Yeah.
Like,
but I honestly would watch Muppet Christmas Carol, like, year-round if I could allow myself to do it. But part of what makes it special is that, you know, I save it. I actually hold off.
He watches all the other Muppet movies year-round.
I do, actually, yeah. But, like, I wait until, like, a rainy day after Thanksgiving. So, like, there are some years where it's sunny for a long time, and I'm like, no, I need a rainy day after Thanksgiving to be able to watch it.
I had no idea how deep this...
No, it's my absolute favorite. Okay, it's the best. And then I also love reading. So I love me some Dickens. And speaking of wordsmiths, a wordy wordsmith, if ever there were one. But I really enjoy reading a lot of Dickens' work. But Christmas Carol is the classic. It is the greatest Christmas story that I really, I mean, like, obviously the greatest Christmas story is Jesus, right? But in terms of the story that we get that brings...
Wait, that's actually like a fictional...
Yeah, like new life to that. Because it is a story of conversion, and it's a story of a resurrection in its own right of someone who really was, like, gone, lost, and found a new path. And so, you know, that I do think that culturally that story brings new meaning to what Christmas, what the celebration of Christmas can be.
Well, I was going to say that the characters in The Christmas Carol are so well known.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows who a Bob Cratchit is. Everybody knows who Ebenezer Scrooge is, that because we know it so well, and little Tiny Tim, that you can, I think more people than not can start to look deeper into mm-hmm. it because we all know it yes. so well. I know you love the Muppet version.
Right.
I, however, recall watching quite a bit the Disney version. I'm not sure if you've ever seen...
With Goofy as
yes, and the Mickey ghost. Is Bob yeah. Cratchit, mm-hmm. and there is like a very pathetic like Mickey's child yeah. mouse
yep, yep.
who's Tiny Tim, and that's yep. always what I see in my head.
Uh-huh.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah. No, it's a great yeah. story that's been given like so many different lives,
sure.
you know, whether it's a cartoon version or a puppet version or a real live action version yep. or a theater version in like any of
there's a
probably thousands of local theaters around the country, right? It's a classic and it's yeah. a great one. And if you haven't read it, read it because it's
surprisingly
not long.
Good.
It's very readable. It goes by, you know,
and not all of Dickens is very readable.
Right.
Like
yeah.
there are some that are and some that are yeah. not. And this
and you
is.
Feel accomplished, yeah. damn it, when you sit down and you read the original version. Yeah. And so last year, that was one of my projects with
yes.
Little Baby Guess was to sit down and read the Dickens version of Christmas Carol so that he was indoctrinated
properly.
What did he
think of it? You know, what was his take? Did he have a...
He gave me a lot of feedback, most of it in
Socky
the form
in the
of
face.
Regurgitation
Baby Guess.
On my shirt or something like that.
Love
but
that, kid.
That was his way of showing love at that time.
Okay,
yeah.
okay.
Now he pees on me instead, apparently.
I love that kid.
Not that
so
it
much.
Just happened tonight and three times this week, but whatever. Yeah.
You're the only person he pees on too.
I know.
Which is great.
That's how he shows love.
Okay. Well, to highlight a few other Christmassy things, I actually had forgotten this one, but I thought of it last week and it's re-remembered that
mm-hmm.
There is a book or an audiobook, which is how I listen to it,
right.
Which is Letters from Father Christmas by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah.
And it's just this collection of letters that he wrote to his kids from
yeah.
Santa Claus or Father Christmas, as
yeah.
the Brits will say. And it's like beautiful. Like they're so loving and sweet. And you can see as his kids get older, the different ways he writes to them. And like one of the last letters is like one of his kids kind of doesn't believe in Santa anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or Father Christmas. And he writes very beautifully to him about that. So I think it's a lesser known, but like
yeah.
very sweet thing to read. It's not very long. And
yeah.
I would recommend it.
Certainly worth a read.
Yes. Letters from.
Yeah.
Father
and
Christmas.
Like one of the great things about Christmas time, you know, is like settling down by the tree and reading one of the stories that is meant to bring those themes to life of, you know,
yeah.
like conversion and learning how to love and all those things. So whether it's, you know, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, if
yes.
that's your favorite, or The Polar Express, if that's your favorite, like whatever it is, and especially during Joy Week, take a moment, sit down. It probably sometimes
yeah.
years go by without reading those things. Or if it was 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Oh, that's
whatever it is.
I have to say, I don't love the Polar Express.
Really?
I know that's like wrong,
yeah.
maybe, but like I just don't get it.
Hmm.
But I'm with you on the Grinch, and Guess is giving me some major side eye.
I'm fascinated because I feel like it's
weird.
A story
it
that
creeps
would...
me out.
Yeah?
It's kind of weird, like you're leaving your house the middle of the night, like getting
yeah.
in strange vehicles.
Well, yeah, but it's all about.
It seems kind of dangerous.
It's
I feel.
Yes. I mean, a train that comes and kidnaps children in the middle of the night. Like, yeah, like that's creepy. I suppose I understand that part of it. But at the same time, so's somebody that breaks into your house every Christmas Eve.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. I never liked it. I don't know why. I think I don't get it. You know
yeah.
why? It's not enough of a story.
Yeah.
He's like, what happens?
Yeah.
He just like goes there.
See, for me, when I was a kid, it was not
like
necessarily
the
story.
What's that about?
It was the illustrations that drew me in. Like
they
I
are
really
beautiful.
Remember looking at like the image of the wolves running through the forest and being like,
nice.
Wow, like that looks so
yeah.
cool.
Okay.
So I once had somebody, maybe an ex-girlfriend, tell me that the Polar Express was not a parody. What's the word? An allegory. For Nazi Germany. That
oh,
you
shit.
Put everybody on a train and you take them far away, and then like
oh my
all of the elves were like Nazis,
very dark.
And I
and
was
not
like,
Advent dark, like dark.
It took me like a few years, a few
shit.
Christmases, to be able to read it and not like think about that and be. So I'm sorry to all of you out there that like
it's
if
a
I've
real,
ruined that.
Yeah.
But then I started reading it like more analytically, and I'm like, no, that's bullshit. Like. You didn't get off of a train at Auschwitz and have someone give you presents and
no,
hot chocolate
there was no
and send
hot
you
chocolate.
Home. This is
no,
all horseshit.
Listen, I don't go that far at all.
Yeah.
I have no like problem with the Polar Express. It just was not something that like spoke to me deeply, and I'm still puzzled by it. But maybe that's because I just watched the movie and like didn't get it even more. I should go back to the book.
Yeah, no, the movie is really maybe the movie is just the really book weird. In a while,
I haven't.
Yeah,
I
you
haven't.
Should revisit the book because the movie does. Fair. The movie is, you know, interesting in its own way, but it's totally different than the book, aside from the fact that there's a train involved. And like the image, like the
I like trains a lot.
The I don't think animation trains, and the illustrations sync up very well. Like they really did try to make the movie look like the book, and yet the story goes
that might be where I'm losing
goes,
it.
Goes off the rails. Oh yes, pun intended.
Wow. He wishes it was a parody.
Joy week, bitches.
Speaking of Nazi Germany, I've been reading a lot of Bonhoeffer.
Wow, how's that for a transition?
Just love when it all ties together.
That's good. I just smacked my knee so loud that I'm pretty sure it's going to show up in the podcast, and it reminded me of when we started doing this, and I couldn't stop clapping. I always clap for some reason.
You would. Yeah. Like how you like punctuated things. Mm-hmm. Now it's good because we don't put our drinks down.
We just hold the drinks.
So when you hear a soft muffled...
Yes, a little pat, all right, so Bonhoeffer.
To go to a not-so-fictional direction.
Yes.
I've been like... Of course I read Bonhoeffer before, like I'm sure like over the years and probably in college and that. But I've really circled back to him because times are dark.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So good old Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a contemporary of the Nazi Germany time, has a lovely little Advent book called God is in the Manger. And I don't love that title, but I really love the reflections, right, that he's written here. And a lot of them are sort of about like the world and like how your faith can be made sense of in that. Like it's a very theological book, but they're short and they're reflective.
Yeah.
One that I shared with you earlier this week had to do with like Merton and tying it into the structures of our world.
Right.
So like, how do you make sense when your structures are broken?
Yeah.
And that is something I need to keep reading over and over.
Right.
Because structures seem pretty damn broken. Yes. So I would suggest pick up.
It's a great time for any kind of book. Like there's so many of them out there for spiritual life in general, not just Christianity, but for a short little daily snippet reading, like a brief reflection so that you can pause kind of in the midst of the chaos of the Christmas season and the holidays and all that stuff. And kind of just give yourself a centering focus for that day. So that's a good one to
And
to
he's throw very like, I think he's good for any of the Advent weeks. Probably would have put him more in the Hope week because it leaves me feeling like it just rounds off that edge of my righteousness.
Yeah.
Like, yes, things are not great
right
now, but things have been not great or worse before.
Mm-hmm.
And here's how we as a people of faith have persevered.
Right.
So, and I think that's a story, like our history, that we need to keep telling ourselves and also rising to the occasion. So I've been prone to fantasy, like getting away from it all. Get me out of here. Yeah. Let me be away from it. And Bonhoeffer is a good way to come back to it and not feel feel centered. Not off kilter.
And, you know, to put that, you know, not to go too deeply into it, but like to put that into the context of the world that Jesus entered into, right?
Because not great
that
either.
Is what we're supposed to be connecting with during Advent. And you look at the church structures of the occupied Judaism that Jesus was born into, and the fact that there was a full spectrum of people. Some of them were saying that we need to go like full hermit, ascetic, like give up everything and live strictly by the law.
Yeah.
And others had basically sold out to the Romans and said, well, they're going to line my pockets, and so I will work closely with them. But like, that was something that isn't even close to the reality of what we have to deal with. That was fucked up on a whole different level, right? And there are people in the world who do have to deal with that today.
We're in a different perspective.
Yeah. So, you
know,
like...
our obligation, right? Like,
but to look at, you know, the brokenness of our current institutional church, you know, in the Catholic tradition, and just kind of get stuck in the navel-gazing and say, wow, it's never been this bad... would be a real tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you do need some perspective, and especially you need some perspective of the world that Jesus was born into and the whole salvation history, like that darkness that preceded the arrival of the Messiah was a for reals darkness.
Yes.
It was war and it was exile. And
that
was
is
ugly.
True, like you said, for some areas of the world and some people today, and we have to know about it.
Right.
So I do just lastly want to tell you that he labels the weeks like this for Advent. Okay. So one is waiting, two is mystery. This week that we're in right now is redemption, which kind of makes sense with what you're saying there.
Yeah.
And the last week is incarnation. So that'll kind of tell you the framework for that book.
Lovely. All lovely. Right.
Anything else from you?
My recommendation for sort of a nonfiction, again, sort you can do it in little snippets, little daily readers or whatever, would be Between Heaven and Mirth from one of our friends, Father James Martin, SJ, of the Jesuits. So he is digging into, he's written a lot of different books. I recommend.
Yeah, this book is what, like 2010,
that I have read.
11 maybe?
Yeah,
yeah, it was, somewhere
it was
in there.
A few
it's
years
a newer
back,
one.
But not like, not too far back. And he dug into the lives of the saints and of sort of the spiritual giants within the Catholic tradition mostly about, you know, finding joy. So it's Between Heaven and Mirth, like, the spirituality of joyfulness and the spirituality of laughter. In fact, one of them, he talks about Thomas Merton, who is generally considered to be a pretty like austere person, like a great thinker and a brilliant writer, but not someone that I thought of. I mean, many of the spiritual
greats.
He's
kind of a person of extremes, right? So he,
a lot of times they are like these people of spirituality are joyful, but it's not necessarily what they're known for. So there's a couple of great stories in there about people like Merton where you think of them as like a deep thinker, brooding almost, and just the laughter that would emanate from his sort of section of the monastery at times and things like that.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's a lovely read, and it's a reminder that spirituality is about joy, and it should not be just about being sort of dour all the time. There's a place for quiet contemplation, and there's a place for community and joy and just kind of having a good belly laugh.
And those things are not that far apart.
Yeah.
Right? And Merton's a great example of that. And I think he will be a saint one day.
Yes.
And I did want to highlight if he is a saint, it'll be December 10th, right? Like, that's the day that he died.
Right.
And it was the day that he entered the monastery.
Yes.
Like, day to day.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a cool little
connection
for him.
Yeah. So, Between Heaven and Mirth, or get into a little bit of Bonhoeffer.
Gosh, we've really given you a wide swath to choose from.
Read some
Stupidest
Dickens,
Angel.
Or some Polar Express, or some Stupidest Angel. If it brings you joy, pick it up.
Yeah, we want to hear about it too.
Yeah. So hit us up by email, churchdrunk@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, @churchdrunkpod.
Yeah.
You can leave comments in the blog at churchdrunk.com. And we are excited that you have joined us for Advent and that you're walking alongside with us. So there's a little something to read, and we'll finish up with our fourth week of Advent with
something to nosh.
Something to
nosh. Oh my gosh. I'm pretty excited about this one.
Favorite foods. We share favorite beverages with you every episode.
All the time.
But it'll be favorite foods next time as we kind of wrap up those 4 weeks of Advent and look ahead to the celebration of Christmas
is coming.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us. We'll hopefully see you again next week here on Church Drunk,
where we spread joy.
We spread that's it. Where we spread joy like butter on toast.
There it is. Cheers.
Cheers.